Imagine living for centuries, perhaps even defying death itself. How would the world change if humans achieved biological immortality? And what implications would that have for society, economy, and governance? We interviewed George Ross, co-president of the Swiss Association of Future Studies, to learn more about the future of humanity and megatrends shaping our world. This episode is part of a series of 12 interviews, brought to you by the Engage Institute and The Broker. Join me as we delve deeper into today's topic with George Ross. I'm Philip, co-founder of the Engage Institute. We empower your employees and clients thanks to engaging insurance training, such as expert interviews. Grow trusted advisors with us.
Today on the show, I have the great pleasure to welcome George Ross. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you for the invitation, Philip.
It's a pleasure, and I'm quite excited to hear about what you have to tell us. You are a futurist. You are the co-president of the Swiss Association of Future Studies. So just to jump into it right away, basically what you do, you look in a crystal ball every morning.
Yes, of course. Futurism or futurology is a systematic approach to future questions. It's not really precise prediction or crystal ball, but you can read some tendencies and try to understand what is really changing in our world. What are the driving forces in the long-term perspective? There's never a precise prediction of the future, but there are some developments that you can describe, or you can build scenarios.
So one of these scenarios, or one of these predictions, there is a doubling of the population in Africa. When is this going to happen, and what will be the impact of this on the world?
I call it a demographic transformation, and it goes as deep as the digital transformation or even the climate change transformation, because the population worldwide will change dramatically to the mid of this century. The population of Africa almost doubles because they have a young population and high fertility. Europe is shrinking and other continents are growing, but slowly, and aging as Europe too. Only Africa stays young and will have a lot of people. The impact is probably very deep because on the one side, we have to build a scenario saying if Africa has a positive economic, social, political development in 2050, Africa will be the continent with the market, emerging markets, with young people, with innovation. But if Africa does not have a positive development in the next 20 to 30 years, the whole world will be involved in solving the challenges combined with that.
Okay, so quite an important one. How will education play a role in this?
A very big role, especially education of women is very important for the future of fertility. Education of women and healthcare. If people realize that most of their children will grow up to adults, then they start to have less children. If women are educated, trying to arrange and manage their households and their families, then the population will not grow as fast as predicted. But demographics is a very, very slow changing movement because all those women which are in the age of being able to give birth, they are already born. And even if they only have three children, it still is a huge growth. Demographic changes goes very slow and will impact not the next 20, 30 years, but will show a change in the next 40 to 50 years. The interesting thing is that the UN Population Prospects expects that world population will stop growing in the year of 2084, and then a population will slowly shrink.
How many will we be in 2084?
I think they say 10.6 billion people. But the interesting thing is in 300 years, they expect the population to come down to 2.3 billion again, as it was in the beginning of last century. We see a decline of fertility rate in the last 50 years from 5 children for a woman to 2.5 right now. If it goes below 2, there is not even a replacement of father and mother. This will finally lead to a shrinking population, which we already have in some countries like Japan, China now. We do have it in Eastern Europe. I just did some research on Bulgaria. They are shrinking very much. Russia too. Fertility rate is low. And if you do not have migration to compensate, then it ends up in a shrinking population. Of course, there's one thing that we have to keep in mind. It takes much longer because life expectancy is growing at the same time. So if you don't die with 60, but with 75, it takes longer to have these effects being seen.
And you speak about life expectancy. You see biology as the next big thing. So are we going to see the end of death, the death of death?
I have a colleague, he has written the book, The Death of Death. He's very convinced that this will happen. What we have to see is we'll be able to slow down aging, and maybe in a certain degree, it's possible to stop aging. Whether or not we can reverse aging, I am a little bit skeptical. We do have really mighty tools developed in the last 10 years. One of them is synthetic biology. Now we can build life artificially, but it's livable cells, for example. And we do have phenomenal technology called CRISPR, which we can repair genes. One single gene, we can change it, turn it off, turn it on. And it's already used to cure inherited diseases. And I think this will prolong life expectancy in the future more and more.
Do you want to go until you're 300 or 400 years old?
Myself?
Yeah.
No. I think I see a lot of problems. For me personally, I do not like this, the signs of aging that I have already. I don't like them. And when I look at my father, he passed away 2 years ago and he was over 90 years old and he had bad hearing, so he was socially excluded and he was kind of a mild form of dementia. And he always said to me, aging is not nice. And he was right. If we can cure some of these symptoms of aging, I would love to have it.
If we freeze you now or keep you in your present state for the next 300 years, what do you do? You have the option.
Well, the interesting thing would be to come and to see the world in 300 years, what has happened. And if I would have been freezed, then I would not have to live through these 300 years. But the idea is that you're not just not dying if you don't want to die. I'm trained as a philosopher, and for me, it makes sense that the prospect of being a being that will die someday gives some interesting loads on my present life. And loads sounds negative. I don't know how to express it positively. It just means it's important. Every single moment is important. And if we lose this kind of perspective, then we could say, well, I don't do it now. I can do it in 20 years or next year and so on. And then from a global perspective, let's assume it would be possible to eliminate death. We're looking in the future for 40, 50, 60 years ahead, and then we will see a very old population and a much more growing population. And then would be the question, should we stop to have children? Because there's no need for replacement. We are taking the place in mentally also, not only a physical problem, but probably the smallest one, but mentally from who is in charge, who can change things, who develops new ideas when these old people are just staying in the world.
Old politicians being presidents of a country for 300
yes.
years.
And then we don't have two old guys like now in the United States, but we have very old guys like 120 against 125. And I don't really think that's a desirable future, not for me at least.
So what would be the impact of this on insurance, on retirement, on the whole pension system?
Imagine you pay in for 40 years and then live 240 years of this pension. It's a good deal. But there won't be many companies being able to pay the pension. We would have to, of course, work lifelong. Our situation is very different than it was 100 years ago or 60 years ago, because physically and biologically, we are much younger with 60 or 70 than 40 years ago. Actually, we could really question the idea of a fixed pension age. Why should we say 65 and then it's finished?
Going to trigger some issues if we have some viewers in France listening to our interview.
Well, I'm always surprised about the pension age in France because they do have a demographic change. They do have a growing population. They have a higher fertility rate as average in Europe, but still also French people getting much older than earlier days. But when it's flexible and not fixed, then you need new schemes, of course. But I know a lot of people who reach the age of 65 and they have to leave their jobs. And they don't like to leave their jobs. They would love to continue it. Maybe not in the same way.
And when you reach that age, I think you have such a wealth of knowledge that you could share. It's incredible to leave the workplace if you don't want to.
Yes.
You speak about mega trends. What are they? How are they different to regular trends?
Yes, mega trends. This was John Naisbitt in the 1990s who wrote this book, Mega Trends, and he gave the definition that mega trends are overarching developments with a global reach, with a long-lasting, that's a difference to trends or hypes. They have an effect on all the things. I call it ubiquitous. It impacts society, politics, economy, business, my personal life, my family life, culture, everything is affected of those megatrends. That's not a prediction of the future, but it changed the framework. We talked about change in population. That's a different framework. We can talk about artificial intelligence, digital transformation, health. You know, we have a growing health. This is changing the framework. Megatrends are the most predictable aspect of the future. Of course, they can change, be totally different. But let's take again demographics. To have a huge change in demographics, you would have to think of apocalyptic catastrophe. We had this COVID infection problem worldwide, but COVID with millions of death people, it didn't change the trends of demographic transformation. So it's possible that they come to an end or to the counterpart, but it's unlikely.
And what are the top four mega trends in the world at the moment?
I kind of put them together to five big transformations. We talked about the demographic transformation. Maybe we will talk about the digital transformation. We have the ecological transformation. This is a huge issue, climate change. We do have the geopolitical transformation, the new world order. And fifth, we already mentioned a little bit, is the biotransformation, the next big thing growing out of biological research on technology.
So you speak about one of these big mega trends, this geopolitical transformation. Next year, there will be elections in more than 70 countries. In the US, Trump is running ahead at the moment in the polls, so he might be the next president. Around the world, you have a lot of autocrats, dictators. Are we witnessing the end of democracy?
It's a difficult time for democracy, and I'm concerned about that. You cannot see the future of politics in the megatrends. Actually, will autocracies grow or not? It's hard to tell with that tool, but it is my concern. And we have a lot of tensions and frictions coming up. The growing population, resource scarcity, climate change. And in Western countries, we have this deep concern about the political culture.
So what do you mean with that?
More and more movements and parties gain with saying that they don't really believe in democracy. They don't believe in the institutions. Let's take Donald Trump. The big problem is not that they may have a president who lies, but if you deconstruct the institution, like the independency of justice system, like the acceptance of elections, all these kind of rules that we need for a democracy, if we do not accept those rules, then we are on a very dangerous pathway, because then we cannot correct mistakes. Democracy usually can correct mistakes. I live in a country where the people are asked many times a year for a lot of issues. For example, we vote on having an extra pension, 8.33% plus to give away for everyone who has pension. And we vote on that. And at the same time, there's another issue, another initiative asking us to vote on, shall we raise pension age to 66 and then adjust it to life expectancy? We have the choice. I do not say that Swiss people sometimes choose the wrong thing, but in a democracy, you can fix it. When you see it goes in the wrong direction, 2, 3, 4 years later, you come up with an issue and saying we have to fix that and we can vote on that.
In the dictatorship, you can too. I mean, the dictator says, well, it's the wrong direction. I changed the direction. And we saw this several times during COVID.
That's the seduction of autocracies. I see a lot of people around here admiring how fast China is implementing new technologies. And they say, that's the way it has to go. Democracy is too slow. And I believe that's very dangerous. I will really fight for democratic rules. And I hope we can bring that into the future.
I like your enthusiasm. 2023 was a tough year for many people, a lot of crisis and wars. What's your take on 2024? Will it be even worse, or are we going to see it as a more peaceful year?
I always say, when you ask me for 2024 or just 1 year ahead, basically everything stays the way it is, a little bit more, a bit less of the same, except those things that nobody expected to happen. Look at the economic prediction. They have to revise it 4 times a year. When you ask me 10 years or 15 years, it's a bit easier because then you have those structural changes that we call megatrends. But next year or this year, I don't know.
How does that work in your job? You wake up in the morning, have your little cup of coffee, and you start thinking about the megatrends and how the world works. So what do you do as a futurist?
I'm collecting a lot of information, checking a lot of news. I'm mostly reading and trying to understand the patterns of change. The megatrends are very helpful because I try to see, do those developments that I can observe, are they part of a megatrend or are they the countertrend? Sometimes the countertrend is also important. We have trend of acceleration, but we have deceleration too. It's possible to have a successful business model on the countertrend, like wellness, digital detox. It's all deceleration, but it's only important because we have the acceleration megatrend.
Back to my question on how you work. You arrive in the morning, you read all these things, but you use maybe AI to summarize things for you, and then you start understanding better these trends.
Well, yes, I already do have the framework, and these are my megatrends, of course. I have all the search engines for information on all these trends. I try to understand early signals. I think the most important thing is to stay rational and not being part of hypes. The most important skill is critical thinking. That's what people want from me. They want someone who puts things in a certain context. That's what I'm doing now. Artificial intelligence, a huge hype among people who for the first time realize the capacity of artificial intelligence. It's important to explain, yes, it has a tremendous influence, but no, it never will have a human consciousness. I think that's the most important part of my job.
Just on a, it will never have a mind. Now, you just spoke about the capability we have of creating the living in a way. We can create organs, cells. What if we could recreate a brain, tissues, and then we recompose a being after a while? Is this completely impossible?
You never say completely impossible, but I think we are very far away. I'm not an engineer, I'm not a physician, but our brain is so complex. And what they do with artificial intelligence is trying to copy the way our brain works in a very small part. And until we reach the complexity of our brain, I believe it takes long, even though if you assume exponential growth of knowledge and technology. A human being is not only mind, it's also very physical. What we taste, what we feel, cold, warm, what we eat, and this makes a whole experience, and this makes actually what human being means. I believe maybe one day we can replicate a head, but not everything as a complex system.
You spoke about hypes before. A few years ago, people said, well, the blockchain, crypto, that's a hype. And then now we have ChatGPT, the metaverse, the blockchain, quantum computing. So will they all be used in the future?
I think blockchain is a technology that will be very useful in the future. It's not my invention. It's the Gartner cycle of new technology, the curve here, exaggerated expectations of what a technology will do, and then it will fall down and then slowly going. The really tough thing is not to assume that those technologies, quantum computing or blockchain technology, will have a huge impact, but when? That's the more tricky to say, when is application ready for many uses.
What kind of major risk do you see for the world among cybersecurity, another COVID, climate change, AI taking over, war, Taiwan and all this?
Those are major risks that you mentioned, and it's hard to say which one is top number one. The dangerous point is when the system has this fast change, I don't know in English, when it
flips German?
Over, when the system
when it starts crippling, I think.
Crippling, exactly, and that would be very dangerous. But cyber crime, solar storms, the super volcano, war, Taiwan, very dangerous for our living standard because we are really depending on China. Trying to change that a little bit now, that's dangerous. But to make a chart, it's hard to say.
You developed an early warning system for your customers. Can you detect new trends and developments? What is this?
If you want to be faster than your competitor, if you want to detect risks and opportunities faster, then you cannot wait until a change is a clear trend, because then everybody knows it. To detect early signals, weak signals, which are not sure yet, it's very noisy. You don't know a hint of a world which is changing, or is it just a singular event? But you collect those signals and have a process of evaluating. What would that mean for us? Is it something that we have to watch very close? Do we have a second, third, fourth signal in the same direction? What would it mean for our business? It must be an ongoing process of detecting and interpreting changes or signals of change.
Is this something you do manually, or do you have a system that finds these weak signals?
Yes, you can use some technologies. I didn't use that at the project that I did it last time. The important thing is the interpretation. I still believe in human mind.
That's good.
You can have very good successions of the machine, but it's a hard one to really interpret those signals.
Yeah, I believe in human mind and AI working well together. That's the
together,
winning combination
that's the point.
For me.
Exactly, yes.
Now, you made all these analysis and you find these weak signals and you make some predictions. Did you ever go wrong?
Because I mostly talk about those megatrends, and those are long-lasting trends. They have a long history, and my thesis is that they will influence our world the next decade. Of course, you miss something. Didn't realize 10 years, 20 years ago that artificial intelligence will be that much of an impact. I didn't have on mind all those biotransformational aspects. So I add certain things, but to say that one of those megatrends has come to an end so far, I have never had. The globalization, there was one time a few years ago, COVID, more tensions in global trade. Some people said deglobalization will start. And that's always the counterpart. The localization, what's the counter trend of globalization? Globalization changes a bit, but is still the megatrend and not the deglobalization. But if the war, Taiwan, China, Western world, really would come, then we probably would have a deglobalization.
We're nearing the end of our discussion. What do you truly desire for the future of our world?
What I truly desire is a very positive human development. We have made a lot of progress in the last 40, 50, 60 years. Child mortality has come down dramatically. Life expectancy worldwide has grown. But still, there's a long way to go for that every human being on this planet has a decent life. This is one of my biggest desires. And then I find it a wonderful perspective, vision, that the energy that we will use will be totally renewable. Even if we would not have climate change problems, it would be a wonderful goal for the future. And then you already realized that I am really a fighter for freedom, democratic rights. And so I hope that the freedom for people will grow and not decline in the world.
George, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. Thanks for your views into the future. And let's check out in a few years from now what has happened. All the best.
Very good.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Philip.
That's all for today's episode, where we brought you some of the latest and greatest from the training, technology, and insurance worlds. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our guests for sharing their valuable insight with us. If you struggle to capture the knowledge of your experts, contact us. We'll record engaging interviews with them for you to share. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our channel and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also find us on YouTube or LinkedIn, where you can watch the full video of this interview and many others. This interview was made possible thanks to our colleagues, Laura Salvadio, for the coordination of this interview, and Patrice Sejano for a powerful remote interview studio based on AI. Until next time, stay safe and stay insured. Cheers.